And now, from Star Worldwide Networks, it's time for Don Cromwell Live, an insightful, entertaining look into all aspects of the music industry. You'll never hear music the same way again. Now here's your host, producer, songwriter, musician, and former Air Supply and Eddie Money bassist, Don Cromwell.
Hey, I like it. A little bit more controlled than the last bunch. I watch my VU meters go. Bleed. Welcome everybody to Don Cromwell Live. So happy to have you here tonight. Hard to believe halfway through March. I always talk about the time. You know, one of my songs called Take Time. Already half the way through March, man. It's incredible. But we're here. I got a great guest. I've got some nice ladies with me. We're going to get into it in a second. But I always like to do a couple of my little personal service announcements. And thank you. Lori Reamer is here, of course. And she turned me on today, the fact that we lost Bobby Caldwell yesterday, Lori.
Yeah. It was announced this morning, though. Yeah. So
I didn't
hate
know.
To be the bearer of bad news. It was so sad.
Yeah. 71. It's, again, far too young. We were talking before the show. We're all at that point right now. We're losing a lot of great people. The bass player who passed away, what was his name? I'm sorry.
Our dear friend, Stephen Lawrence.
Yeah, Stephen.
Yeah, we just lost him.
And that's my special guest, Terry Woolman, kicking in. I'm going to give him a proper introduction in a minute. I always like to acknowledge things like that. They come and go, and it's a crazy kind of life, and you just want to enjoy every day while you can.
Every minute while you can.
Also, I always, when I put out my little email blast, and of course, every once in a while I put out to people, if you want me to take you off the list, I will, and only a couple have done that over the years, which is great, but I'm sensitive to that. But I got a lot of people who hit me up saying, oh, yeah, yeah. My good friend Tim Godwin said to say hi to Terry, to one of my dear, dear friends, such a talented lady, Pamela Phillips Oland. Do you happen to know her? Pamela is a classic lyricist, Brill Building, written for Sinatra. I mean, huge, huge success. She has the longest running play in Dutch history currently. But she had put in the email, if I could please mention that she has just initiated the Pamela Phillips Oland Excellence in the Art of Writing Lyrics Award with the College of Fine Arts at UNLV, that's University of Nevada, Las Vegas, where she's an alumnus. And I know Pamela, she's such a sweetheart, she's so talented, I've written with her, she's just the best, and if there's anything that I can do to promote things like that, I'm going to do it. Again, Pamela Phillips Oland Excellence in the Art of Writing Lyrics Award. That's in conjunction with the College of Fine Arts at UNLV. The winner gets a $5,000 cash prize and gets to go to the UNLV to work with their students in the fine arts department. April 17th is the deadline. I don't know any of the connections, but I'm sure if you Google that, Pamela Phillips Oland, Pamela, you're the best. I love you. And I will get somebody to sing that song we just finished soon. I love it. All right. That's out of the way. I'm very excited to have in the studio. This man does wear many hats. Your resume was... I stopped counting names at 25 of people who you worked with, but I think we were meant to be here, Kismet, and I'm so sorry you had to drive so darn long, Mr. Terry Woolman.
Yeah. Thank you for having me, and it's great to be here with you.
Yeah, he's just got a great vibe, doesn't he, Dan?
He sure does. And
Lori Reamer already mentioned her name. She's brought us together. She's brought me so much talent to this studio and my show. I appreciate it so much. Lori, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I just got back from New England, and... you know, just catching up this week, so glad to be here.
Good, and you got out just before the nor'easter kicked in.
Yeah, another one.
Yeah, I mean, California, for those who are out of state, we've just been getting hammered. We need the water, we need the snow, we need it all, but it's wreaked havoc in a lot of spots. Danny Forrest, D4, is back in town with her own mic. How are you, Danny?
I'm doing great, ready for a fantastic show.
Yeah. She was really into your album covers and stuff. But again, let's turn our attention to Terry Woolman. He's my guest. A producer, songwriter, guitarist. You've worked with some most iconic artists. Terry, people who I've never met personally and we're meeting for the first time tonight, I always say my listeners, your listeners, your fans, because you do your own podcast. We'll get into that later. Just tell us a little bit about your background, how you got started, and again, all the many things that you've accomplished.
It's great to be here with you. And hey, to all you listeners, thanks for joining us. Well, I grew up in Miami, born and raised in Miami, which was an anomaly by the time I was in first grade. Everybody seemed mesmerized by the fact that I was actually born there. The other kids in the class, because there were a lot of transplants from other parts of the country. But it was a great place to grow up. Loved it. You know, like ride your bicycle everywhere, just leave it on somebody's front yard. Don't lock it and come out later after you've been swimming and everything and the bike's still there and you ride home. And, you know, it was a good time. It wasn't a perfect time, but a great way to grow up. And to my surprise in looking and back, I wasn't quite aware of it at the time, but I was exposed to a lot of music from living in South Florida.
Sure.
You know, so
sure. Lots of culture there.
Lots of culture. I mean, I could feel the island rhythms, you know, seep into my life and music, just being so close to the Bahamas. And my first album is called Bimini, the closest island to Miami, you know, the first of the Bahamas. But you know, I just sort of had a regular childhood. I really spent a lot of time playing and running around and exercising. And I took guitar lessons when I was a kid, and kind of was forced into it, and sadly didn't have the best of teachers, which is ironic because my parents were educators. Both of them were teachers. So, but they weren't into music. It was kind of the thing that you did and hopefully still do, you know, where people encourage their kids to be involved in the arts. But the teacher didn't really allow me to blossom. It kind of, you know, I came in, I had an idea, or I figured out a Beatles tune or something like that. They said, no, that's not what we're doing this week. So I kind of got a late start, but the upside is that I ended up taking piano lessons as well. I took drum lessons, which my parents were not thrilled about. And
are any parents thrilled about drum lessons?
No drummer that I've ever interviewed, parents were thrilled about that either. But I was on a practice pad. My parents said, well, if you're serious about this, you have to start on a practice pad. I was on a practice pad for a year. Yeah. And then they finally got me a snare. And that went on for like another 6 months. And I thought, I'm going to be 30 years old before I get a full drum kit.
I don't know how to play the shit out of it.
I'm going to play the shit out of a practice pad.
Yeah, they didn't have electric drums back then.
And I did.
That's great.
So
nobody
went on,
could hear you.
Yeah. But so moved on from drums, played clarinet in junior high school band. Not the instrument I wanted to play. I wanted to play the trumpet. It was too loud, and there were three boys in our house, and you know, it was already loud enough for my parents. So it was clarinet or flute. In hindsight, I wish I'd picked flute, but it was clarinet, and that was not my instrument. Mm. But I did it for a year or two, I think, and I was last chair of clarinet, so I knew that, and not for lack of trying, but I always thought it'd be cool. I thought this would be so, I'd love to be in a horn band and do the choreography and play, you know, and be in a really tight section and all that. So there's something about that, I became an arranger, you know, so that's my way into being in a horn band. And then when I was 15, I moved to Mexico City with my dad and my older brother, and we lived there for 6 months. And that's when I got serious about the guitar. I bought a nylon string guitar in Mexico. Found somebody who started giving me lessons, and then I kept going. I never turned back from that point.
Yeah. So that's your main instrument is guitar.
Yes.
You're right. Interesting. I mean, again, I'm looking at all the stuff you've done and all the people you've played with and worked with. How did you end up in LA and get into those type of circles?
Well, I always thought I'd go back to Miami, where I was born and raised, but I moved to Boston to go to school there. I went to Berkeley, got a degree in arranging, and of course was studying guitar, but the major was arranging. I feel like when I went to Berkeley, I went there as a guitar player. I came out as a musician. you know, more well-rounded. I know you know what I'm talking
sure,
about.
Sure, yeah.
As a well-rounded musician yourself.
Yeah.
And
I didn't go to Berkeley.
Well, but...
I partied in Berkeley, California. Well, yeah.
Right. So we do. We do have the same...
Yes. Yeah. Right. We're like this.
The one. Almost exact same experience.
There you go.
Except I didn't see a party for 3 years when I was in Boston, except I was playing one.
Yeah.
You know.
The Boston Tea Party.
Yeah, and I saw the Boston Tea Party. But so I went there, and then... honestly, I knew I wanted to be in the record business. I wanted to be the person whose name you recognized on the back of an album cover. Mm. Guitar, Terry Wallman. Song written by Terry Wallman. Arranger, producer, Terry Wallman. Never considered being on the front side of an album cover. But that just came. You know, that's where life took me, and I embraced it. And I love it. And I still love being on the backside of other people's album covers, too. It's still a joy for me to do that.
Yeah.
So the question was, how do I do that? You want to make records. It's New York, L.A., Miami.
Yeah.
A really dear friend of mine who I grew up with, Bobby Thomas Jr., percussionist for Weather Report back in the original day. We're best of friends since junior high school. Bobby told me not to come home. He said, because there's no work in Miami if you're not Latin. At the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was needing to go to Europe or New York to play with David Sanborn or whatever, you know. So he said, there's nothing here. I love you. I really would love to see you come back. But it's New York or LA. And I didn't really want to go to either of those two places. And I, quite frankly, I was cold. I was really cold from living in Boston for 3 years, having moved to Miami.
Yeah. Big difference.
Yeah. And I, so I thought I'd give LA a chance. You know, I that's where the records that I gravitated to growing up came from California or Miami, you know, from Criteria Studios and sure. All the amazing music that I got to be on the sideline and go to some of those sessions and watch and just be exposed to that. I mean, amazing records from New York also, but I just didn't, at the time I thought if I moved to New York, it would, you know, chew me up and spit me mm. out. And some of that was from living in Boston where, you know, walking, I mean, any city. But, you know, walking late at night with my guitar strapped over my shoulder and thinking I need to be conscious and use this as a weapon if anybody attacks me. And like, I didn't want to keep living that way, you know. And again, I love Boston. But, you know, our hours, you know, you're up early, you're out late, you know, and I kind of felt the same about New York. It didn't seem as much that way in LA. And I thought, I'm going to give it a try. So I packed my Honda station wagon with my Les Paul and my acoustic guitar and my Champion juicer and, you know, and drove cross country.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, you know, because every musician, every artist and anybody who's creative and people doing other things too, has a story to tell. And, you know, I think if you were from Miami, probably the least differential of all those places would be California. It's sunny. It's
well, climate-wise, absolutely.
You know, and the LA scene has changed so much over the years, but I'm sure back then it was jumping and just judging by your success and your incredible credits, it was a good move for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's say that.
I would agree.
Yeah.
Well, I had a question, though.
Mm-hmm.
You said you gravitated towards certain albums, certain music in LA, and I'm just curious what that was.
I'd love the question. They were certainly like the Crosby, Stills, Nash, Young albums, a lot of vocal albums, Joni Mitchell.
The Laurel Canyon
Laurel Canyon scene, Donovan. The very first concert mm-hmm. I went to was Donovan with this young woman, singer-songwriter named Carol King.
Her.
Right.
Yeah. Unknown.
I was 13. It was my first concert, and I remember it. And I mean, because I actually, when Carole King was singing and playing, I just walked down to the front of the stage like a moth to a flame and just stood at the foot of the stage. Nobody stopped me. I was a kid. And it was the 60s, 70s,
yeah.
late 60s.
Yeah.
And just watched that. So I love melodies. I love lyrics and I love great players. Like, and as a matter of fact, one of the bands that really impacted me was The Section. you know, the section that backed up James Taylor.
Yeah, I remember. Yep.
And Jackson
now
Brown and
now
everybody.
Now the immediate family.
Now they're the immediate family with their friend Steve Postel added.
Yeah.
And,
mm-hmm.
And, mm-hmm. and, you know, to later on in life, you know, get to work with or know those musicians is it's wonderful. It's really wonderful. But it was kind of that kind of playing. And I heard it in Miami as well because Criteria was there and there were amazing records like Fleetwood Mac was there. I met them when I was at Criteria one time doing a demo and they were in the other room and, mm-hmm. you know, and Lindsey Buckingham showed me how he played Landslide.
Really?
And,
wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Because I had figured it out myself.
And he's like, no.
Yeah. No, I was actually right. which was really a treat. But yeah, he played it for me. So how do you play it? And it was great. It was just during a break that they were having. And
that's cool, man.
So, very cool. So it was rock music, and then folk rock. And deeply, deeply, deeply influenced by R&B music.
Mm-hmm.
A pivotal song for me when I was just another moth to the flame moment, the first time I heard Sitting on the Dock of the Bay, Otis Redding.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I heard it, we were in school and we were out on the playground, must have been, I think, junior high school, and I heard this music just coming from a car, and it was that song, and I walked towards the car because I needed to be closer to it to hear it. So I have a deep, deep love of R&B music and soul music.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I know that soul because of one of the songs we're going to play, your cover of What is Hip.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I grew up near 10 minutes from mm-hmm. Oakland, California. And I used to hear Tower of Power before I couldn't get in the club, but I would stand outside.
There you go, same thing.
Rocco Prestia, God rest his soul.
Yeah.
And, you know, but when I saw that you covered that, I said, okay, now he's really in. But again, again, all due credit. I mean, you know, Berklee College, you know, music, it's as good as it gets when it comes to, you know, discipline and really, but then you got to go out and create a career, which you've done an amazing job of.
Thank you. And, yeah. You know, I think it started on the drive up to Boston, going to Berklee, because I didn't really have any financial support from my family. They weren't able to. So I love my family, but not a book was paid for, not rent, not anything. So it was student loans and applying for scholarships and not being a protege. So I did not get a free ride at Berklee. And the bar was set very high there, of course, mm-hmm. as well. And then also, you know, gigging and, you know, doing the jazz clubs at night or whatever, you know, just doing it. But it's where I started to form a point of view about having a career. Mm-hmm. Because I knew that I love playing guitar. I mean, it's my greatest joy. But I love writing music. I love producing. I love arranging, music directing, performing. There's a lot, and not that many people do, but I have to say that a couple of my influence, well, Joe Sample, who I worked with when I first moved to LA from the Crusaders, so he was a deep influence. Dave Grusin, same, because arranger, player, writer, just magnificent musician. And then Bob James, who I just had the thrill of recording with for the first time.
Yeah.
And but these were, and Quincy Jones. So those were like the four.
Well, excuse me.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday, Quincy.
Him. Happy birthday, Quincy.
I think it was yesterday.
Yesterday, I think.
And he's not somebody who I've had the pleasure of working with, but these other people I have, and they've deeply influenced me. And also, against what other people would say when they said, well, you can't be a music director, you know, for a TV show if you don't play piano. It's like, yes, I can.
Yeah.
Well, look around now. Look at Questlove.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, not only a fantastic musician, but he's a filmmaker.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, so anything does go. But I knew that it was possible because here were these four giants who were doing it. And I thought, well, I can do that too. And I want to.
Mm-hmm. Right. Perfect, man.
Yeah.
What a great. Now, something you said to me right before we went on the air, Rockin' Robin took us on, is this is the first chance you've had to talk about your new record.
It is.
So let's make that a priority, because one of the things I love, and I love hearing stories, and we tell stories all day long, but I'd love to help people and promote things, because new music, it's hard to cut through and make a difference and get people to notice. But talk about your new record and how excited you are. It comes out in 2 days, right?
Yeah. It debuts on the 17th.
That's so fantastic.
Yeah. I am here to shine the light on the record, but also on the story of the record. And it's to me, it's a fantastic story. And I'm not alone in this story. Because there are other, I really believe that some of the music that is coming out now that was created during the pandemic is magnificent. There's a deeper dive as
no pun intended.
Yeah, well, as which we will talk further about.
Oh yeah, Danny loves that.
but really, you know, we all know how to record remotely. You know, we've learned to do that over the years, and I've got a studio, and you've got a studio we're sitting in, but there's the magic of being in the room together. You know, and seeing each other, seeing the smile, the fear, the excitement, everybody totally turning on a dime together that happens. We couldn't do that because we were all in lockdown. I started the record right before COVID. I actually started, the first song that I started recording was What Is Hip, the one cover song, everything else I wrote. And I kind of moved the speed of doing it up, you know, in my schedule, because my friend Will Lee was coming out from New York, bass player,
I know Will. Who Will Lee is.
Well, as everybody knows, and magnificent singer as well. And
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's great singer, really good. And so, but Will had just, you know, reached out and said, "Hey, my wife and I are coming out to LA. We want to see you guys for coffee or something." And it's like, that'd be great. And I said, "How long are you going to be here?" And he said, "We're going to be here for 2 weeks. I'm working on a project." And I said, "Do you want to play on a song?" And he said, "Oh, yeah, that'd be really cool." I said, "I'm working on this arrangement of What Is Hip. It'd be really fun to have you on it." So I kind of moved it along. I recorded all of my guitar parts at home and had some loops up and everything. And then Will was in town, and he and I went over to John Robinson's studio, drummer, JR.
Yeah, one of the greatest. I think he's the most recorded drummer in history, right?
He might be.
I believe that's his moniker now.
Yeah.
I believe.
Yeah. He's always been one of the most recorded drummers and remarkable drummers.
At least one of them.
But he might be, he might have, you know, taken the place of number one right now, deservedly, because he's remarkable.
Yeah.
So anyway, we got together and recorded live bass and drums to the tracks that I had done. You know, I'd laid the melody down, all my rhythm parts and everything, and drum loops. And it was fantastic. And then a week later, this virus, we weren't really sure. Maybe we're not all supposed to get together. And so that happened, you know. And I sent the tracks to Luis Conte to do...
Who I know very well.
Yeah, to love do percussion, Luis, because he was going to be leaving town, which didn't happen, you know, because of the pandemic. But so he added his percussion, and then the world stopped. And so did the recording of that song and this record. And it was that way for a while. I was still writing, but all of us were, it was hard to be creative because we were more concerned about not dying.
Yeah. That takes up a lot of mental real estate.
It does.
Yeah, and we were getting pounded with a lot of that news.
Yeah.
Fear and...
Yeah. And also, you know, trying to all collectively figure out how to keep a roof over our heads and food in the fridge and take care of our neighbors and our families and ourselves and all of that. So I was still writing, but the record came to a halt. Then I got inspired to continue writing and started finishing the song, like, you know, remotely with people. Like, and so Greg Manning played piano on it down in San Diego. And then I reached out to Andy Snitzer in New York, and Andy played, because we had worked with on a movie together that I was co-producing the music for. And plus, we had always been following each other and said, "Oh, we should play together. We should do something together." And when people say that, I look them in the eye and I say, "I would love to. I'm going to hold you to that."
Exactly.
If you mean it, we're going to do it.
Yeah.
And those happened. Najee had reached out to me, you know, before, and he said, "Hey, you know, we've never recorded together. We've played together live and on TV." And so I wrote a song for Najee and I. That, like, every song has a story, and I can tell you more detail about the song and the story, but everything came together in this beautiful, magnificent way, to the point that when I started reaching out to people, not just in different parts of California and the East Coast, but then it was, well, all bets are off. I reached out to friends in Europe. I reached out to my friend Ricky Kej in India because I had a dream about this song, and I knew it was called Dancing in the Light, and it was majestic and epic, and it was American musicians and Indian musicians. And so I reached out to Ricky and just said, hey, I had this dream. And he said, let's do it. Send it to me.
Right.
You know, and so we did that. So like there were no limits. But the beauty, the real beauty of the story to me is that it required a level of connection and intimacy and communication that we had to take a different path to get there. It happens intuitively as musicians when we play, because playing is a very intimate, connected experience when done right, you know, being present and listening, really listening, and communicating and respecting and digging in and all of that stuff. But when you're not in the room together and it's one person at a time, even with the horn arrangement of What Is Hip, I did that remotely with Dan Higgins and Wayne Bergeron, like two guys in separate studios stacking a horn arrangement, which we'll play for you today.
Yeah, you bet.
But like all of that, it sounds and feels, I think, well, I know that like everybody is in the room together, just connecting, deeply, deeply connecting and enjoying, because we just weren't all in the room together,
right.
But we were deeply connecting because we had conversations.
Right.
We had to talk about it. We went back and forth, and what's your intention? What are you feeling? Where do you want me to go with this? And it was a beautiful experience that I think we were all craving, because we were all craving to be creative again and to work our way out of our collective global sadness and fear and anything else that was going on. And I thought, well, I need to make myself feel better, and hopefully it will make other people feel better. And it did along the way. Music therapy.
It shows up in lots of ways.
You just have to see
that that's what it is.
Yeah.
You know?
So, and there's a healing in creating music. There's another healing in sharing music. And so I just had these magnificent experiences with musicians around the globe who were all sitting at home wishing that they had something positive and creative to do.
You did your own Playing for Change.
Yeah. Yeah, I did. Yeah. And I love those guys too. Yeah. Yeah. I've watched them grow from the beginning, from their very first project. So,
well, what a great point of view.
Let's
what a
hear
great
some.
Story. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would, but again, you've got your new album coming out in 2 days.
2 days. Yeah.
And your website is Terry Wollman, WOLLMAN.com.
Correct.
Which is very impressive, by the way.
Thank you.
And so, yeah, you got that lined up, Danny?
I got Gratitude and Attitude.
Here we go. It's the opening song on the record, featuring Bob James on keyboards, nice. Abraham Laboriel on bass, J.R. Robinson on drums, Luis Contant percussion, and me on acoustic and electric guitars, just having the time of my life with these guys.
Yeah. I don't blame you. It's probably the time of your life with guys like that, but that they're there for you says it all.
It means a lot to me.
Love that title. Let's do it.
Hit it, Danny. small, man. Heads were bopping, toes were tapping, man. It's so great
beautiful.
To hear. Great song, number one.
Thank you.
It's so great to hear pros like that play.
Huh? Isn't it?
Huh?
Yeah, for me too.
So subtle. And
yeah.
But I love Luis's triangle.
Me too.
Loved
yeah.
it.
every these guys are magnificent. Yeah. And they're the reason I moved to LA. I yeah. wanted to work with the greatest musicians in the yeah. world, and these are them, and it's such a joy also. And also, this is really fun for me to sit in a room with you and share the music, because
yeah.
I haven't done that yet.
That's great.
Good. Yeah. Because that's, at the end of the day, and you said it earlier, sharing the music is what it's all about.
Yeah.
Because you can't let that sit on a shelf right there.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
Thank you.
And JR, he used to live out in this area. I don't know if he still does. I got to get him on.
Yeah.
When I met JR, he was playing drums with Rufus.
Yeah.
And he used to come and sit in with our band at, I said it earlier, the Red Onions.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
man, I go, who was that man? He was amazing.
Yeah, he's a beast.
Just Mr. Groove. But again, you have some other impressive drummers you've worked. I said it before we went on, Sugarfoot Moffat.
Yeah.
I heard him play with Madonna probably late 80s, and he's just a machine. But you know, when you get to the level of all these guys, they're there for a reason.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
And there's two reasons. One is that they're remarkable musicians. The other reason is they're good people.
Right, right. Yeah. No, nobody wants to be on the road with,
nope,
you know, a-holes.
No.
Right?
Or in the studio.
That's correct.
Or in the studio, right?
Yeah, especially traveling, but right, yes.
Or anywhere.
Yeah. Right. Or even at lunch.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, geez, this guy wants to go to lunch. Yeah. But now, so the album's coming out. Friday.
Yes, and this song...
St. Patty's Day.
Yeah, and this song that you just heard, Gratitude and Attitude, just got released as a pre-single, digital single for streaming.
Right.
So it's Spotify, go...
I was just
go to
say,
Spotify.
Sweet.
And subscribe to Spotify. You know, it's free, and you get to support any artist who you love by just hitting the click button.
Yeah.
No. Is that you on the pictorial image with the guitar slung across your back?
Yes, it is.
And who's the lovely lady leaning into your shoulder?
That is my wife, Melanie. We're talking about the picture of us sort of walking
yes.
off into the distance on a beach for the Gratitude and Attitude.
Yeah. Melanie Taylor, everybody.
Melanie Taylor.
Take a note.
Okay.
We've got some also, tidbits.
There's two Taylors in that because it's a Taylor guitar, but by the way.
And shout out to
Tim Godwin, who I just love and have worked with for years. And I've been a Taylor artist for longer than I can remember.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And your wife does something interesting too, as I recall you saying before the show.
She does a lot of things that are interesting.
Way to dovetail, Danny.
Enough about you, Terry.
My wife, Melanie, is a singer and a dancer. She has a theater background, and she's a touring singer and artist herself.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. But she's currently in Vegas with?
She's currently in working with Barry Manilow.
Oh.
They travel
oh, okay.
as well, but they have sort of an
residency.
It's a residency,
yeah.
Thank you, in Las Vegas that they've been doing. So she's been doing that, but prior to that, she's toured with Aerosmith, John Mayer, Joe Walsh. She was a Harlette for
Ooh.
About 10 years or so, years before I knew her, you know, with Bette Midler. So she has...
What a great deal.
She's really gifted.
Yeah,
yeah, really talented.
Obviously.
Yeah.
And you were saying before the show that Steven Tyler really, really thanked her for her
yeah.
contribution to Aerosmith.
Yeah, she
because
was.
Because my experience with the people I know, Aerosmith can be challenging to work with.
Yeah.
But obviously, Steven Tyler appreciated your wife.
Very much so. And she was the first singer, female singer, to sing on an Aerosmith record, too.
Really?
Yeah.
Which one was that?
I don't remember the name. I wasn't prepared.
Come on, it's not on your
it's
notes.
It's not in my notes.
That's okay. But
all right, back to the album.
Melanie.
Well, I remembered the day in detail, you know, because it was very exciting for her.
Mm-hmm.
But and then he later on asked her to go out on the road
Fantastic.
With her.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, Melanie, if you're listening now or on the podcast, great to meet you.
We love you, Mel.
Cyber-wise, yeah. Oh, have you know her?
I know Mel.
Yeah, they're friends, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's keep going on the record. We got two other tracks that you sent me.
Yeah, why don't we play some more music?
Okay.
Yes, what are you looking for?
Well, yeah. why don't we knock him over the head with what is hit?
Oh, baby. A man after my own heart. So, give me the fuck.
So what is hip? I normally don't do cover songs, but I, like everybody, have been deeply influenced by Tower Power. I love the guys. A little trivia is that the Tower Power horn section, including Emilio, they played on my Bimini record. I wrote two horn arrangements on my very first record in 1988 and got those guys to play. And so we sort, it's sort of a full circle for me to show my homage to them and to how great they are, and to, you know, they're part of the reason I became a horn arranger as well. So
awesome.
And I love this song, and it's really fun to play.
You ready for us, D4?
For sure.
All right. Oh. I am ready. Let's do this.
What is hip? Bring
what
it on, man.
What is hip?
All right. Love this track. Oh, yeah. Is Will Lee on bass?
That's right.
Woo. I hope he's listening.
Funky, man.
Yeah, we put our foot in it, didn't we?
You put your foot in it. Fantastic. So that's on your new album, or is that?
That's on the new record. We released it last year just to put it out there while I was getting ready to complete the record and do the photo shoot. And
the underwater album cover. All right, let's talk visuals.
I know you want to talk about that. Yeah. Well, I did too.
Go on.
But before
let's
we
talk
get into that, though, I just like made, I've known you for a long time, and I just made this observation. Terry is like the calmest, like coolest, like mellowest guy, but he turns out shit like that. And it's like, it's his alter ego almost. And you find the people who's going to define it and interpret it exactly what's going on in your brain. Yeah, and that's sort of the epitome of what I just noticed. Like, it's happened.
I think that might also have to do with that. I trained in martial arts for years and I have a black belt.
Right.
So I know, so I know how to, you know, take no prisoner.
I really love your songs, right?
Wait, black belt what?
Karate.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Impressive.
Yeah, it was great. Great training.
Okay.
Danny, don't look at me.
Willie,
I'm like,
if you're listening, when next time you're in LA, we got to bring you into the studio here.
Yeah.
I'd love to have an interview with him.
He's wonderful.
Yeah. Great I've seen him so many times, and he's the musical director for Love Rocks in New York City, which they just did last Thursday. Uh-huh. I was at that show in 2019. And it was fantastic. I think Andy may have actually been on that show.
Yeah, they play
show
together a lot. Yeah.
Paul Schaefer. I mean, it just kind of goes on and on. That's just a great band. Mm-hmm.
Gee, too bad Will Lee wasn't grooving in that
show.
Incredible.
Well, you know what was interesting?
I picture him.
it was interesting, too, for all of us who played on that track. But also, I had this conversation with Emilio and Doc and David Garibaldi because I wanted their blessing. You know, to record their song. So I let them know I was doing it. They were incredibly supportive and they have been even more so supportive after they heard what we did. So that's been a real kick for me as well. But we wanted to make, I didn't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, but I also didn't want to just do a cover of it. I wanted to find a way to make it my own. And that was part of that conversation I had with everybody who played on the track, especially when we were cutting the, you know, the basics, bass and drums. It's like we're not going to throw out Rocco Prestia's amazing machine gun 16th note bass part, but we're not copying it. So use it when it's appropriate. I wrote some of the lines in, and we talked about it. You know, how far to go, and basically what I told each of the guys in the band in the making of this particular song, since it was a cover, is honor the original, but this is a new arrangement. We're not trying to sound like that. Too many people have already tried to do that. They already did it perfectly. Tower Power got it right the first time.
That's right.
Right.
So I don't need to do that again. And anybody who I've heard try that, it falls short for me personally, even if they're great musicians. So I really worked hard when I cover other people's songs. Like when I did my Christmas album, and of course those were mostly covers, it's like, how do I find a new way to do it and put my own spin on it? And I think we did.
I think you did too.
Yeah.
And as a bass player, I'm listening to what Willie's doing, of course, and I hear, he captures the feel.
Yeah,
he's making it his own.
He's driving it the way he drives.
Yeah,
he's making it his own.
Yeah,
which ties into you making the song your own.
Yeah.
Fantastic, man. Really good. Now, was that virtual recording or were you all together?
What I was saying is that's the very first song that I started recording for the album right before COVID. So the bass drums session were the only two people that were ever in the room live together with me there, but I had already recorded my guitar parts. So we had something to play to so that they understood where the song was going.
Yeah.
But everything else was virtual. Andy Snitzer in New York, the horn arrangement that I wrote and then recorded part by part by sending it to Wayne Bergeron. And Wayne said, let me do all the trumpets and flugelhorns first. Mm. And then we'll get all the phrasing and the dynamics and everything. And then Dan Higgins will add all of the alto tenor barry and alto flutes. Yeah. So there are a lot of instruments on this track, but every single part, besides bass drums, were done remotely.
Oh, because it has a bit more space than T.O.P.'s.
Yeah, but I wanted more space,
that's
too.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Right. And it really works.
It would have, and that space that I would have created even if we all did it live in the room, because that was on the paper as well.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, one of my favorite things one of my favorite moments oftentimes in songwriting and arranging and producing, when I'm producing other artists, is where to put silence.
Yeah.
You know, I love the in-betweens.
Of course. The breaths. And I sensed that those guys were all like in it with you and kind of got everything you just talked about and made sure that people like me who are listening to it feel what they were experiencing, making like super hard to make sure that came through.
Yeah.
And it did.
Great.
It did. It's driving. It's great. I love it.
And I feel each of those people who played on the record every time I listen to the track. I feel their heart. I feel their talent. Oh,
yeah. They're not just punching the clock.
Oh, no.
They're not calling it in at all. It's like,
nobody does.
Totally.
Hey, so, Terry, let's talk about your podcast. You do your own podcast, Making It With.
Yeah, Making It With Terry Wallman and me.
Amazing.
I've been
7 years.
7 years hosting a podcast. It's been really a blast. You know, we were talking about our first guest, your first guest on your show.
Eddie Money.
My very first guest was Melissa Manchester.
Oh, yeah.
My second guests were Alan and Marilyn Bergman, which was incredible.
Oh.
And then
he trumped me right there.
No, it's not a trump.
My second guest was the guitar player from the Red Onion Days.
All right, it is a trump, but that wasn't my goal there.
No,
that's not what I was going for.
I'm kidding.
What I wanted to do was set the bar high, let people know that this is a show that's really about truthful conversations, as is yours, which is why I listen to you, but also why I'm here today.
Thank you.
And so kindred spirit in sharing the behind, you know, the story, the heart of the story with artists. But also, I wanted to make sure that at that point, then I could call anybody to ask if they would be on the show. And they go, well, who's been on the show? And I start with those two.
Yeah.
And they go, what's your name again? Or wait, what are the available dates or whatever?
It's so true.
It is so true. Anything, when we're putting on our shows, you know, we're doing a benefit.
We're in a different world, man.
Who's done it? Who's in?
Right.
Oh, so-and-so.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll do it.
Yeah. One of my very...
I have a funny story about that. I'll circle back.
No, please. Well, tell it now.
Lori just said, who's in? You know, and then people like start to go, wait a second. My very first LA band that I put together, I had forgotten about this, but this is a great story. I was playing with Billy Preston, which is a huge thing. It was my very first tour.
That is huge.
And there's another example of, you know, you think I'm kind of quiet, and which I am, but until it's time to not be.
Until it's time.
I was going to say, I haven't seen that aspect.
Right.
Yeah. Which I love.
Yeah. But the thing is, so I'd come back to town, couldn't get arrested, which was kind of terrifying and didn't make sense to me. And I just needed to play, and I started writing music and put a band together. But first I got a gig. And I got a gig before I had a band, and it was at the Comedy Store on Sunset Boulevard, where they were like, I think on Saturday nights, having live music. So I got this gig, and then it's like, oh, well, now I need a band. And so I started reaching out, and basically I reached out to Ed Eckstein, who worked for Quincy Jones. He was basically the vice president of Quest Records.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew Ed. And Ed would always listen to my 8-track tapes and things like that and give them to Quincy to listen to and give me great feedback. And it was always supportive. And so I called him up and I asked about putting a band together. I said, I need some musicians. And I knew some, but I wanted to bump it up a notch, and which is why I moved here. And so he said, well, call Reggie McBride on bass.
Great bass player.
There you go. Yeah.
I know Reggie.
Yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
So I reached out to Reggie and cold called him. We're the dearest of friends now. We've toured together with Keb Mo. We've done other things together and recorded together over the years. But anyway, Reggie, I just said, hey, my name's Terry Wallman. I have a show. I'm putting, I need to put the band together. Ed Eckstein recommended you. And he goes, oh, well, when's the show? And so I told him, and he said, okay, yeah, great. Put me down for it. And I said, great. I'll get back to you with the details. Then I started calling other people, and each of them said, well, who else is in the band?
Who's in?
Right, Lori?
And bingo.
And I said, well, Reggie McBride's playing bass.
Okay, sign me up.
Oh, what did you say your name was again? or when was the date?
When's the gig?
I knew these people, but not that well.
Right.
And put this great,
ba- say.
great band together. And the funniest part of that story is years later, Kev Moe asked me to join his band for a year. Reggie had been playing with Kevin for a long time, and we were all friends. And so there we were traveling together, which was really fun, and playing together every night. And somehow that story came up, you know, like, how do you guys know each other? Where do you go back? And so we were telling the story and laughing about it, you know, telling the rest of the band and everything. And then Reggie said, how did you get me to say yes again? Because we didn't know each other, right?
Right.
And I said, well, I just...
And his calendar is probably so full.
I said, you're the reason the rest of the band said yes.
That's really funny.
Yeah.
So we all laughed about it. Right. And we've gone on to become great friends over the years. And
it's
make a lot
so
of music.
Cool. Well, because people... And you're right. They need to... You're immediately legitimate.
Yeah.
You know, when you throw out a name like Reggie or, you know, all the people you're... And again, it's an incredible list of... artists and musicians you've worked with. I'm sure you're very proud. What's the third tune you want to play? We got it up.
You had said Dancing with the Light?
Dancing in the Light.
In the Light.
Dancing in the Light. This was the song that I dreamt.
Ooh.
Literally, I woke up with this song. It wasn't complete. Like, the melody wasn't complete, but the feeling was complete. And the growing, like being really sonically really interesting, and I knew it was a world music thing. And this is the one where I reached out when I woke up knowing that it was this epic. It was like a Bollywood movie by the end of the song. And so I reached out to my friend Ricky Kez, who's a 3-time Grammy winner now, and
awesome.
We co-wrote this song and recorded it remotely and had a couple Zoom meetings and those intimate conversations I'm talking about. And
this was India?
India. So it's a combination of these amazing American musicians, that everybody that I work with, and also two vocalists, actually more than two. My wife, Melanie Taylor, singing, because I wanted to add some vocal. Actually, I laid a vocal down for the melody concept, and Ricky liked it, and he said, we should keep vocals in it. So I said, I want an Indian singer, too. So Shathra HG sang. I'm playing all the guitars, cavaquinho, various instruments. There's sitar, flute, gatam, Indian percussion. That's from the Indian musicians. And then bass, drums, percussion with the guys here, Abraham and JR and Luis. And then we needed a choir at the end. And I was planning on an Indian choir. That's how I dreamt it. But it didn't happen due to logistics and timing, because Ricky was up for another Grammy and got really busy. He had won a Grammy with Stuart Copeland for an album that they did remotely during COVID. So I ended up stacking vocals with Melanie and myself, and then reached out to my friend Talik Olsted in Amsterdam. And he stacked, we made a virtual choir with the three of us.
Nice.
And I want to give props to Peter Kelsey, who mixed this song with me on this record, and who was absolutely just terrified by and astounded by the amount of tracks on this song.
I know that feeling.
And so that's that song.
All right,
let's hear it.
You ready?
All right, hit Dancing it. In the Light.
Oh, thank you, Danny. What great music.
I just have one question.
Yeah.
When is the video coming out?
Yes.
That I'm seeing it.
I dreamt the whole video, too.
Oh, I'm sure.
I've been trying to pin down
dancers
Ricky.
And scarves and yeah. like colors.
Colors and yeah, elephants and yeah, yeah, everything.
I've been to India. Have you?
I have not yet.
It's exactly all that.
Yes. Mm.
Cows running in the street.
Yeah.
And all those little three-wheeled things and poverty everywhere, yeah. But it's a very vibrant area.
I'd say, from what I understand about India, from friends who have been there, and of course having a friend of Ricky Kesh, is India is everything everywhere all at once.
This is true.
It really is.
Absolutely.
All of that.
Yeah, right. You're
I've been several times. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
It is.
I wanted to capture the magnificence of both cultures, yeah. You know, like a East meets West, Indian culture, American culture, with the best of both worlds.
Well, I think you did. Terry Woolman, I'm not going to play the song I was going to play because we're near our... No, it doesn't matter. I want to finish up on your music, your thing. I'll play that later.
Okay.
It was a Bobby Caldwell song that I wrote with my dear friend Joyce. But we'll play that some other time. But we will acknowledge Bobby Caldwell's passing. R.I.P.
Absolutely.
But, man, Terry Woolman, WOLLMAN.com. Anything else that you'd like to promote? Talk about.
I would. And by the way, you can find everything. You can get my Spotify there. You can hear podcasts from there. So it's a great place just to go to find out more about me. You had a question about the album cover, because can you describe what
there you go.
The album cover?
I just love that you're underwater with a guitar.
That's right.
And you're just floating. It reminded me of the Nirvana album cover where the baby and the right? dollar bill. And I'm like, oh,
that
I like this.
Lawsuit about?
I want to hear about this. So yes, do tell.
Yeah. And I haven't seen anything since the Nirvana cover really quite like that. And so a friend of mine, Rochelle Neely, her company is Beneath the Surface Photography. Go check her out. Is an underwater photographer. She's a sports injury specialist, chiropractor dealing with prenatal kids. That's her expertise.
Wow.
But she's a magnificent photographer, as many people are. They're doctors and artists simultaneously. And so she was showing me pictures of these beautiful underwater photographs that she had taken, and essentially asked me if I would consider modeling for her, just going in the water. And I said, I would love to. I've never done that. It would be a really unique experience. And she said, and you can play one of your guitars. And I said, not one of my guitars.
A guitar.
But yes, we can get a guitar from a pawn shop or something and do that. But I also want to take pictures without guitars because I think that'd be fun. So we basically went in the water we did a 2-hour session. It was really fun. It was physically exhausting, but I had a great time. She was just so much fun and made it really comfortable. And these are real photos. They're not photoshopped. And all of the photos that you see from this series are me in the water. And so we did that. And the thing was, I never intended it to be to make a record cover, an album cover, single covers with it, but the pictures turned out so great. And when we both looked at the one that is on the Surface album cover, we both stopped and said, that's just such a great photo that looks like an album cover. So we made it happen. It became the album cover.
Awesome.
And yeah. Surface is the name of your album.
It is.
Yeah.
Love
and
it.
Do you have some of those images like digitally up on your website? For
yes. Thank you for mentioning. Yes, we are incorporating them into the website as we're refreshing so there's a lot of new pictures up there. There will be more. I also have some videos of behind the scenes of us in the water together that are pretty funny, but you can see how they're fun. You can see how we did it. And I have some stories about that as well that I'll be sharing, continuing to share in other conversations everywhere. So
yeah, because you have your own podcast, and it's just... Listen, it's a world we live in, man. You're making great music. I already know
right?
that.
Thank you.
And Terry, does your podcast, is it live or is it people just always listen to the archive?
We broadcast live.
And what
on
night?
Tuesdays, 2 to 3 p.m. Pacific time. So it is live. You can find the link through my website. Daytime.
Good for other time zones.
Well, all time zones, including Europe, because I've had Jean-Luc Ponty at his home in Paris. And, you know, so it's like 10 o'clock at night there. So it's doable. And then East Coast as well. And even I had Ricky Kesh in India, you know, a few years ago. So it does work out to be a good time for me. But yes, so I'll be talking more about it on the podcast. As a matter of fact, we're doing a feature tomorrow on my show. as well, like a special episode.
All right. We nice. Love special episodes. What? Who just said
I just
that?
Said nice.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
It is nice. And again, thank you, Terry, for being here. Thank you, Lori, for setting us up.
Yes.
You've been amazing. Thank you, D4, Danny. And thank you to my network back there, the Star Worldwide Networks back in Phoenix. Dave, the Mayor Pratt, he's the best. He keeps me fired up. But my producer, rockin' Robin Cote, she wrote a great book called Soul Stirrings. It's
love
an amazing
it. Great book.
I love talking about it. We both love it. Anything I can do to help people do what they love to do, protect and pray for your police officers, be respectful, pray for our troops, past, present, and future. John Lennon said it best.
All you need is love.
All you need is love, baby.
Yes, sir.
And music, I love how you're doing it, man. It's about healing. It's about doing the right thing. Thank you, everybody, so much for tuning in to Don Cromwell Live. We really appreciate it. Take time. Enjoy life. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Take care.
Thank you, Don.
Peace, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Don Cromwell Live. Producer, songwriter, musician, and former Air Supply and Eddie Money bassist, Don Cromwell. Every week, Don Cromwell Live connects the artist with you, the fan. Hear Don Cromwell Live as it happens Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern. Or on demand, 24-7 on StarWorldWideNetworks.com. And follow Don at Facebook.com/Don Cromwell. And Twitter at Don Cromwell Live. Don Cromwell Live from StarWorldWideNetworks.com.